Welcome to 20 Minute Tabletop, a podcast where each episode we share something from the gaming world we find interesting or exciting. I'm Tom.
And I'm Kev. And in this episode, we're going to talk about the crossover between the game collector and the game player.
Yeah, I think that crossover is something that most board gamers can empathise with, really. I'm staring at my Kallax shelves right now with a growing sense of guilt. I've got just shy of 100 games in the collection. In fact, I added one this weekend. I added Agricola Family Edition from the charity shop, or thrift store, as they're called abroad, I believe. And it's edging ever so close to 100. And every game that I purchase or buy these days, I've got to be honest, it adds a certain sense of guilt into my life.
You see, I think of it in terms of that storage, and I've got a Kallax as well, although I've got one very small Kallax. It's a 2x4 that I'm looking at now, and I'll post a picture of my pretty well-organised Kallax to the Instagram page, because only recently I've just updated my Kallax, and it's looking pretty good, really. I had a big clear-out. I got rid of about 4 or 5 games, especially Wingspan, after we chatted about it when we were down in Oxford in the first episode. And I've made room for a couple of others. But I think the collector part of me on the board game front is feeling pretty smug at the moment, because it's very, very lean. But you're not so much at the moment, are you not, Tom?
No, in fact, I've got games scattered around my feet, to the left, to the right of me. I am having discussions at the minute. I very much nearly went out to a neighbouring town to pick up another Kallax. You know, I suppose the reason why we want to talk about this is I think that this is a universal kind of concern that a lot of gamers have, really, which is when the collection goes out of hand. And I do think there's some significant issues with it, really. You know, there's very much the cult of the new. I spent quite a lot of money at Christmas collecting and adding a few games to the collection. Really deep, good games like Ark Nova, which is a... You're familiar with Ark Nova?
Only the box art, which has lots of beautiful pictures of animals on the front. So I'm guessing the Ark and the animals, there is some kind of creation of a set of animals, is there?
No, it's a zoo, essentially. Right. You're managing and funding the zoo. But what I mean by that is, you know, there's absolutely... Ark Nova should be a game that I could play 30, 40, 50 times. And I've so far got it out this year 3 times. And already I'm starting to get a little bit twitchy and start thinking, oh, I could add something else into the collection now that I've played that. And I do think there's a real issue for gamers. I wondered really whether part of my love of games isn't the actual playing of the games, but is the accumulation of them, you know, as objects themselves. I think it's human nature, isn't it? You know, you get your vinyl collectors, you get your musicians with the 10 guitars, you get photographers with far too many lenses or too many cameras. They can only use one. You get miniature gamers. I imagine there's lots of miniature gamers with thousands of miniatures unpainted, lots of paint and no time to do it.
Well, it's the archetypal pile of shame, as they call it, the grey pile of plastic, which most people have. And until recently, there's another confession coming here, I've been pretty good, but I'm just about to film some Kill Team content for my own YouTube channel. And I've just got the Kill Team starter box and a couple of Kill Teams. I'm also in a weekly Malifaux League, and I've picked up a couple of boxes. For the first time in probably about 3 years, I reckon I've got about 30 miniatures that I need to paint up. Yeah, it feels a little bit oppressive. And the collector element of it is you do want to get the next thing. There's always a reason to get it. Oh, we'll find a time to play this. This would fit perfectly in my crew. Oh, this my friend would love this particular board game. But it adds a lot of pressure, doesn't it? And, you know, I think you've really got to be careful, because it can detract from the hobby, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I lay my guilt in a particular way for this. A surprising number of the games in my collection are games that I have sourced from unusual means. I will spend every Saturday morning wandering around the charity shops or thrift stores, as it were, in town looking for board games. And I found... Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if I said about 50 or 60% of the games I've got have been from Facebook Marketplace or places like charity shops or car boot sales. You know, and the one wonderful thing about board games I find is that they never lose their value. So if you find a game that's half its market value, you can add it into your collection and you don't have to feel too bad about it, because you know that at any point you can put it on eBay and you can sell it and you can get the money back. It's the money that you've invested into the game, I think, isn't lost money. It's still there, and therefore I justify it to myself. The issue for me is space, really, and guilt. You know, I've got about 15, 16 unplayed games that I'm looking at, and every day I look at them, they go down the list because I get a new one and I think, oh, that's up there. You know, one of the games is Seasons, which is an old game. I can't ever see myself playing it now, really. You know, so there is that issue.
I think, you see, we all do mental gymnastics when it comes to justifying a collection. Like, you talked about the cost there and how the cost isn't so much of a big thing, because, you know, you can trade your way. And, you know, I had a friend that had tens and tens and tens of thousands of Magic the Gathering cards, and he made a profit. He had some really powerful ones. He had cards out of the Power 9, and he actually made money accumulating these cards because he knew what to keep and what to sell. In fact, there's a whole subreddit devoted to the topic of MTG finance. So you can make money, but I don't think the monetary cost is actually the cost. Like you hinted at, there's a cost of space, there's a cost of sanity, and also guilt. You know, there's a mental health impact of having too much stuff, which is not just a board game thing. To accumulate all this stuff, it takes up a lot of headspace, doesn't it? Especially with board. I mean, I, as we've said many times over the first few episodes, I play way more miniatures games than board games. And I think one of the reasons for that is because with a miniatures game, you can have big, expansive battles with lots of different miniatures, but the core rule set is the same. At my age, you know, with a couple of young kids, I feel like I've got only enough headspace to keep a couple of complicated rule sets in my head. And that's, you know, how the miniature games really work for me, because I can throw myself all into and have lots of variation across the different crews and opponents and things. Board gamers, you know, you see on Instagram and YouTube, huge Kallaxes, like he says, and it is always Kallaxes, hundreds of games. I think that is hundreds of sets of really complicated rules to learn. You know, it might take you, I think, was it you that was had a friend played Root for a couple of sessions? Maybe not even a couple, maybe once. Everyone thought it was okay. But that is a game you could play every week as a hobby game, probably for a whole year, and still only scratch the surface of its depth. And yet, it's one game out of maybe 500.
Yeah, and in fact, it was interesting because I was talking to the person who owns Root, and he was saying to me that what he wants to do now is literally give people £5 note in order to just say, here's a fiver, go on to Play Store, whatever it is, or iPhone Play Store, and I will buy you Root. Just sit at home and play Root and learn how to play Root, because I love this game. But we had such a bad time getting it to the table that one time. He plays slightly different factions that have a totally different rule set. I mean, even Ark Nova the other night, it was an hour's explanation of the rules. And that's a lot of investment in time. You're right, there's a lot of investment in time for then to shelve it for 6 months and not play it again.
And even assuming that everyone did love it and you all really enjoyed it, you've probably only scratched the surface of the strategy. And it's not by game 4 or 5 that you're going to be firing on all cylinders and you're actually getting the most out of that game. But of course, you're never going to get to game 4 or 5 because the collector in that one board gamer, and if you're in a group of maybe 8, then you've potentially got 8 collectors, you're drawing on maybe a pool of, could be 1,000 games, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is, and you're making me feel really bad about it, because you're right, that's exactly the situation that I'm rocking with my friends. Each one of us has got a guilt shelf, and we're trying to bring those games. And when you bring the game to the thing, you've played it, and you think, oh, I feel less guilty about it. But, you know, the reality is that's probably the only time it's going to be played. But I'm looking at you, Kev, and I'm thinking, you can't be impervious to this. You must have had, everybody collect something, you know, in this field. And I know you talked about your miniatures. Has there been anything else that you've really got addicted to? Or?
Oh, well, yeah, Tom, I'm usually pretty good with the miniatures pile of shame. I've got a bit of a pile at the moment, but one thing you get from the miniatures is you can finish your miniatures. You can't ever really finish the stack of board games because there's always more plays you can have. But I've just been working my way through a Malifaux set, the Intrepid Emissary. There's 2 models in the box, quite a big box, but that box is now gone. It's now 2 little models in my case, and they're both finished. and it was a really enjoyable evening's hobby. And so the miniatures thing I feel less guilty about, and I'm also pretty disciplined in that. But I've got my own vice, Tom, and that is Too Many Bones, which was one of the big Kickstarters from Chip Theory Games. So wonderful component quality. I don't know if you've ever played it.
No, I'm familiar with it. I watched a few playthroughs of it. It did look like an amazing game. But again, I knew that there was an investment there that I couldn't put into it, given my one in, one out kind of situation with games.
Well, I started off with the Undertow box, which is a standalone expansion, and had that for a while. It's actually quite small, and it worked really well. I thought, oh, well, I'll get into this. And then, of course, I got into my own MTG finance type situation where a bit of speculation. I looked on eBay, and these things go out of print all the time. So I sold my copy of Undertow when it was out of print. I got a couple of hundred quid for it, unbelievably. And then when it came back into print, I then rebought it. And of course, I could justify buying some extra stuff because it's free money, isn't it, Tom? So I got the core set, and then I picked up a few expansions. And then, you know what? It was only a few pounds away from free shipping, wasn't it? So I put a few extra characters in there. And then I thought, you know what? I'm not going to order this for, you know, maybe ever again. So I'll make the most of it. And it goes up in value, so it's fine, isn't it? It's totally fine. And I got a couple of expansions. I think I got the 40 Days in Dior, Age of Tyranny. So yeah, I've got one entire square of Kallax devoted to Too Many Bones.
Go on, how much of it is still in cellophane?
Well, I'm justifying, like, what would I say about mental gymnastics? I'm justifying this because, you know, I might not commit, I might not open it, and when I've got more time, I might play it, but then if I don't, then maybe I'll put it back on eBay and I might even make some money. But I would say there's two characters I've unwrapped. I played it with Undertow, haven't even got into the core set, and that's been, what, 3 years now? But that is my one big vice in this world of board games and miniatures games.
You did a very good job with Magic the Gathering. I remember you telling me a few years ago, because you did used to be quite into that game. I approached it a bit late. I remember in the late 90s, about 95, 96, staring through shop windows at this, you know, this logo. And it really enticed me as a 15, 16 year old, but I never got into it. And I was only about 30 when I first found a box on Facebook Marketplace, which enticed me into it. But you collected a bit, and then you did something quite interesting to slim down. I can't remember what it was, though. What did you do?
No, I love Magic the Gathering as well. And I used to play, I wouldn't say competitively, but I used to play all the pre-releases. And if there are any kind of standard, you know, all game stores played the same competition on the same day, kind of, you know, casual organized play is how I'd describe it. That's an expensive way to do it because you chase in packs. And if you've ever played Standard, which if you're not familiar with Magic the Gathering, there's lots of different ways you can play this game. It's a trading card game. So you're opening packs and you get maybe 15 cards. 12 of them are common, worthless, probably not that good. 3 of them are going to be either uncommon, rare, or mythic rare. So there's this whole market economy of trying to chase expensive, useful cards. And these cards go in and out of date and in and out of usefulness according to the game meta that's going on at the moment. And I played that for a while. It's expensive and it takes a lot of headspace to keep up. And I moved away from where that game store was being, you know, that local scene was. And I learned about Pauper, which is a format of Magic the Gathering where you can only play with common cards. And that's interesting enough because it's obviously cheaper. But what I really liked about that is I put aside all of the deck building and brewing aspect of the game, which, you know, is rich and full side hobby in itself. And I basically net decked, to my great shame, probably about 8 to 10 of the kind of best Pauper decks, and I constructed them. I bought the cards as singles, so each deck probably costs about, what, 20 to 30 pounds, which is still mad considering these are the cheapest cards in the game. But each deck's probably about 20 pounds, and I've just put it in a couple of cases, and it occupies about a quarter of one Kallax cube, and that's my Magic the Gathering, and that's quite enough for me. I've got basically a deck of each archetype. And my friends that play Magic Gathering, we can crack them out. And I've also got one commander deck. Talking of collectors, I've also got you could not have a commander deck, but I managed to stop somehow. I avoided that that rail of getting into that. So I've got one commander deck and about 8 to 10 pauper decks. But I think we both narrowly avoided another trail of sadness and misery and expense, in that we tried out Flesh and Blood, didn't we? Which is another kind of trading card game. And they almost do that model for you, don't they? They have starter decks, and I think I bought 3 or 4, you bought 3 or 4, and that's like a sealed box experience, isn't it?
Yeah, we tried that in our last trip away to Oxford, and I've still got them. I've taken them to the table a few times. I must say, it's never really sang with me as a game. I mean, it was fine. I enjoyed it. And there's probably going to be some Flesh and Blood listeners out there who say how terribly wrong I am about it. And I probably am, to be fair. I never really deep dived in it. The one that we did appeal to us in our previous trip to Oxford was when we tried out Keyforge. And what was interesting about that was the fact that you could buy just one box and you'd get a unique deck. And it kind of took away the necessity to keep buying packs and boosters and boosters, because you automatically got a little playable deck out of the box.
Yeah, that was another way that the game's publisher almost took away all the options for you and said, here, have this, and you can stop here if you want. And that worked really well. There's an interesting side story about how that game came to an end. And I believe it was all the decks were algorithmically based. And so I believe the rumour is that the publisher was hacked, and basically they lost use of the algorithm. And so the game died. I think they're bringing it back. But the idea that you can have a capsule experience outside of a metagame is quite an interesting one.
I know that Garfield's just brought out a game called Mindbug, which is a Magic the Gathering light. My friend bought it. He says it's fine. It's good enough. It's an easy sort of get to the table kind of game. But so I don't know how dedicated he is into pushing back the Keyforge, particularly if they've lost all that investment. I don't know how successful it was really when it came out.
I think it was very successful. But again, who knows? And it's another FFG game, which they are notorious in my mind for creating brilliant products and then summarily binning them later down the line. And that's happened with X-Wing, which is another game that I was really into. They changed from version 1 to version 2 and I kind of lost. But I heard an interesting concept about the capsule game.
The capsule game?
Yeah, so capsule game. This is a bit of a made-up term, so I'm not surprised that you haven't really heard of it.
Right.
But it's the idea of a time capsule that you can freeze any game, particularly something with an ongoing release schedule, at a particular point in time. You don't have to stay up and collect all the expansions. I've done that with Magic the Gathering. I just stopped it at a point and said, right, enough. I'm happy with this. And I really wish that I'd done it with, like I said, one of the favourite games that I've played, a miniatures game called X-Wing, the miniatures game, pre-painted miniatures, another FFG special. They went from version 1 to version 2, and at that point I just had Ted, our firstborn, and I kind of fell out of the scene, for obvious reasons, and then never really got back into it, and I lost my way. And what I should have done there is said, I love this game, I'm going to freeze it, keep everything as it is, and just play the rule set as it was at that point, that beautiful point in time, when everything was balanced and it worked really well. And instead, I kind of dropped out and tried to get back into it and ended up kind of losing my love for the game. Things have moved on and I never got back into it. So it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to collect. You can collect a bit of it and just stop.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, really, because it's the Fantasy Flight game, Game of Thrones living card game. That was probably the first game I ever really collected. But like you, I went through, they had a system where they brought out chapter packs almost monthly and went through different cycles, like the Westeros cycle. And alongside that, they had deluxe expansions. And I collected all but one of the deluxe expansions. And I still lose sleep over Dragons of the East. Dragons of the East now is the spice equivalent of Saffron. Honestly, Kev, I've been searching high and low for this. In fact, I put it on pre-order on Zatu Games about a year and a half ago. And every 3 months, when it gets to the delivery date, they just shift it on for another 4 months. And I've been waiting for ages to get this. And I know it's never coming. Fantasy Flight have discontinued the product. I've got no idea why Zatu have got it for back order when it's never going to be released. But yeah, I actually made a decision. I didn't know it was called capsule gaming, but with my friends that were playing this game, that we did choose to stop at the end of a particular cycle. they introduced a new mechanic, I think, called Shadow Cards, which changed the game quite significantly. And it wasn't that the mechanic wasn't good. It's just that we decided that, you know, enough is enough. We've got ring binders and ring binders of these cards. And 90% of the cards that we were purchasing each month were just going into these ring binders. And also the mental headache of trying to construct decks from an ever-expanding card pool just became really, really stressful. What used to be like an hour's job, you know, because I'm a gamer. I do want to win. When I'm turning up with a deck I've constructed to play against a friend, I do want to win. It's not the most important thing. It's up there, though. It's up there for me. I do want to be able to go and think, right, I've invested time thinking about this deck. I want this deck to deliver tonight. I've got certain synergies I want to work out. You know, I'm going to blend this house with this house, and I need to think about balancing this, that, and the other. And then obviously the more cards you get in that particular game world, as it were, the more complicated that gets. So we did pause it, but we probably paused it at far too late down the journey. We could have paused it earlier and still had lots and lots of play out of what we did. And like you said, you know, Game of Thrones Living Card Game went through two editions. If I had collected the first edition and then they said, right, all that's now debunked, we're going to go for a second edition, start again, all those ring binders now are defunct, I think I'd have cried, you know, after all of that. But listen, if anybody is listening to this podcast out there who's got Dragons of the East, the deluxe expansion, I will pay good money. I'll pay blood. I'll give you a little part of my soul to have that added so I can just put that card game to rest now.
And you can justify it as well, Tom, because as we've established, we're both excellent at the mental gymnastics needed to keep these game collections going.
Too right. But, you know, I think to round up, I would say that people collect things. It's fine. It could be something else for me. It used to be musical instruments, as it happens, and now it's board games. But actually, it does give me a lot of joy. So, you know, I will sleep tonight, admittedly, with cardboard around the bed.
Well, I'm going to say, yeah, it is fine. But as long as you're able to enjoy that collection, I'm just going to shoehorn in something that I want to do for a future episode, which is about storage and organisation of board games, miniatures games, whatever your particular flavour is. Because I think that is one aspect of the hobby that gets overlooked. And it basically, a good, well-organised collection equals more plays and more fun. So it's definitely something that I want to dive into in a future episode.
Yeah, and one other thing I might want to talk to you about in a future episode is you have influenced me with your talk of these tiny little miniatures. I am playing the game Gaslands, which I believe all I need is to go and raid my kids' car collections, little, you know, Matchbox-style cars, to be able to play that.
That is literally it. I mean, all you need to bring to the game, if someone's already playing, just bring maybe four or five toy cars. Try and pick a theme. If you've got all racing cars or all construction-type vehicles, that'll be helpful for you because you'll make a little gang from these cars. I'm sure they'll explain it all to you. And then if you were going to play with your own gear for the first time, you need to get the rule book and a couple of templates. But I'm sure you'll have all that. Well, one thing is for certain, you're going to have an amazing time. It's a brilliant, super fun game.
Well, I will let you know how that goes when I play. But anyway, thank you very much for listening. And please, can I just do a little bit of plugs? If you have listened to this and you found it tolerable, at the very least, could you do some things for us, which is maybe just tell a friend that you play board games with and say, hey, I've just stumbled across this, and that would be really appreciated. We have got an Instagram page if you want to visit us and say hi. That would be lovely too. But no pressure if you don't want to do either of those things. That's cool. We don't want to take away from your lives, as it were. We want to add a little bit, and hopefully we've done that today.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.